Herbs have been used by people since the dawn of time. When Rockefeller introduced allopathic medicine, many herbal remedies fell by the wayside as people put their faith in prescription pills and the world just gets sicker. Here at Heathen Herbs, we look to the past and to nature for answers. We offer tinctures, magnesium skin cream, lip balm, tooth powder, colloidal silver throat spray, and more. Check us out at heathenherbs.com.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have, as written in the Second Amendment, but you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more, up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover selfdefensefund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today, we will continue looking at the Jew David Reich's book on ancient human DNA and ancient racial admixture, Who We Are and How We Got Here, which I've abbreviated using the acronym HGH for How We Got Here, since I don't like the fact that Reich's title could lead some to confuse his work with Dr. William Pierce's Who We Are. With reference to part one last week, one of my listeners wrote to me saying, quote, "I was fascinated by this weekend's ADV concerning racial divergence and purity. The divergence part makes sense to me. But about the purity part, I wondered about that. I know they are agitating for racial mixing because they want to fill in the density graph between the races, so you eventually have so many people who are of various mixture ratios that you can't tell who is who. Today, you can tell who is what race. And there are also many mixed people as well, but they want more of them, to where everybody is a mix of the current races, and those races blend together. That would seem to divert the natural evolutionary process and would be genocide. To me, that is critical. That cuts off the diverging path. So here is the part that seems tricky to me. If they nibble away at the margins like that and blur the distinctions, and you are in a position to seek a mate, you will have certain expectations along racial lines, and I guess you would say purity would be part of that consideration. The term purity in this case would refer to someone who had not been part of the recent mixing, but had stayed very close to the main stem. You will want to find a person who is on the mainline path, and there will be fewer and fewer of them, harder and harder to identify. So it seems like we really need to resist them filling in the gaps and their constant nibbling away at the margins and blurring the racial landscape. In that sense, protecting purity would seem to matter. Close quote. Yes, purity in that sense does definitely matter. I don't say it doesn't matter. I just say it's been misunderstood. We must not allow the anti-whites to fill in the gaps and blur the lines of distinction. One cross with a black, and evolution is set back many tens of thousands of years, at least in that line. And that line must now be rigorously excluded from our line. Anything which delays the time at which we will completely diverge from the other races is a problem. Any new cross between Europeans and non-Europeans does that severely. In a sane and reasonable moral system, that would be a sin. And it certainly is a sin from a cosmotheist perspective. Another listener wrote, quote, "I wish that I could believe what you mentioned about it becoming impossible to mix and produce offspring with other races. Although most men who aren't black express that they are just not attracted to black women, which is a good thing, I still see far too many whites who are able to produce mongrels from the racially suicidal sin of mixing blood with non-whites. I truly wish that this type of bestiality never could produce offspring, any more than a lonely Arab molesting a female camel. Finally, yes, what an ironic name for the Jewish author." Close quote. Thanks for the note. Yes, his name is ironic. A colleague pointed out to me that Reich is the son of two famous Reichs, a novelist and director of the Holocaust Museum. So his nickname is the Third Reich. Pretty funny, but they won't be laughing at that forever, I predict. When we talk about evolution eventually progressing to the point where it would become impossible to produce fertile offspring with blacks, we may be talking tens of thousands of years, possibly much longer, or God forbid forever, if race mixing at the margins increases. Possibly much less time if a subgroup of whites separates itself completely and then takes charge of its evolutionary destiny by directing its own evolution, which is what the National Alliance intends to do over the next several centuries and more. Another writes, quote, "I've just finished the book. There is nothing new presented. The purpose of the book is to advance a social agenda. If he could get away with being so disingenuous with his interpretation of the material in a scientific paper, he wouldn't have needed the book. I would not recommend the book, except for one remarkable section entitled Real Biological Difference. It starts on page 254, 283 of the PDF. It is a must read. For five pages, the author completely drops all pretense and speaks with a candor and honesty that is not only uncharacteristic of his people, but that contradicts the agenda that makes the rest of the book unbearable. Close quote. Yes, that section of Reich's book is essentially an admission that we racialists have been right all along. As I suggested last week, Reich wants to position himself as the teller of these hard truths, so he can then pull the rug out from under his readers and tell them how much the rich tapestry of mixing really drives evolution and defines what we are. One would expect no less from a racially motivated member of the Jewish anti-race. And to be charitable, maybe he can't help it. But lions can't help trying to eat your sister either, but that doesn't mean you should let them. Another remark on part one deserves attention. Quote, "The part I have a hard time believing is the part where Jews become racially more distinct over time. If they'd stayed in the Middle East like the Sephardic Jews, who I've never come across, not that I know of, then yeah. But with all their shape-shifting diaspora, taking on and mimicking the appearance of their unwilling host nations that they parasitize and leech from, many of them, especially in the Western world, appear whiter and whiter." Close quote. True, I think the Jews are a very peculiar type of human, a parasitic variety that depends on a degree of racial mixture in order to invade the host nation. Something similar has happened with other species, too, and other human races, though it is rare. I don't think that the general rules about divergence and purity I was articulating necessarily apply to Jews. There are several more excellent comments on last week's show, but there isn't enough time to discuss them here. So let's discuss Reich's crown jewel of mixture events, which he claims are a driving force of evolution. The mixture events that have resulted in all races except blacks having significant amounts of Neanderthal DNA. I note briefly that other so-called mixture events alleged by Reich in our lineage are actually just encounters between different varieties of ancient people we would instantly recognize as white if they stood before us today. The Neanderthals were an ancient race that is said to have migrated out of Africa through the Mideast and into Europe some 700,000 years ago, or 600,000 or more years before our pre-European ancestors did the same thing. It is claimed that Neanderthals were different enough from quote-unquote modern humans, a descriptor fraught with its own problems, to be classed as a separate species. Even though this contradicts the definition of species that multiracialists often use as a club on us when denying that blacks deserve their own species classification, the definition that says that if interbreeding with fertile offspring did occur, then there is no difference in species. First, in order for both Asians and Europeans to have this Neanderthal admixture, it is very likely that the admixture took place before Europeans and Asians were substantially differentiated. So we are hardly talking about Europeans mixed with Neanderthals, if we accept the basic thesis. Instead, we are talking about Proto-Eurasians mixed with Neanderthals. Quite a different thing. It's doubtless more significant than, say, an admixture event that occurred between two subspecies of hamster-like creatures ancestral to humans 200 million years ago. But should we really be much more concerned about it? I don't think so. It doesn't change what we are, nor what we have done, nor what we can do, nor does it change one iota the existential dangers we face. Since East Asians have a somewhat higher percentage of Neanderthal gene patterns than Europeans, it also seems likely that the mixture with Proto-Eurasians occurred somewhat more on the path to Asia than on the path to Europe, and that any admixture once pre-Europeans entered Europe was minimal. Speaking of minimal, how much Neanderthal admixture is claimed anyway? We are talking about 1 to 2% in Europeans. This is minimal, comparable to the percentage of white Americans who carry a small amount of non-white ancestry, usually without anyone being able to tell the difference, or even knowing about it themselves. And were these Proto-Eurasians really at a different level of evolutionary development compared to the Neanderthals they encountered in the Near East? Those Proto-Eurasians came, ultimately, from the same population substrate in Africa as did the Neanderthals. True, the Neanderthals migrated north long before the Proto-Eurasians and therefore likely came from a more primitive background, but they had also had much more time to evolve in regions in and near Europe. We know that the Neanderthals actually had larger brains than today's Europeans and Asians. We also know that they were culturally more advanced than was once believed. And remember, the Proto-Eurasians had, biologically speaking, just barely emerged from Africa, just barely differentiated from the Africans of that time when the encounter occurred. And the Africans of that time were likely even more primitive than the Africans of today. 50,000 years ago, when the Neanderthal admixture is said to have occurred, the Proto-Eurasian branch that eventually became European, one, was not in Europe yet, and two, was less than 30% or so along on its 60,000 to 80,000 year journey to becoming fully European. So it is quite conceivable to me that Neanderthals and Proto-Eurasians were roughly at the same evolutionary grade, having gotten there through parallel evolution. Another thing we should consider is that while evolution and racial species differentiation are going on, while the branches on the evolutionary tree sprout and grow, there is always, and must always be, a point where the branches touch. There are no hard lines on the evolutionary tree until full speciation takes place. And even then, a border gradation takes the place of a line, a border gradation which you cannot pass beyond a certain point. Some Multiracialists have pointed out these gradations and argue that they mean that race does not exist. They note that there don't seem to be hard-edged racial boundaries. There are instead gradual changes. One can travel around the world, and as one does so, the racial types often seem to grade into each other. Well, one might as well argue that because there are no hard-edged boundaries between the tiny stream that feeds Lake Itasca, the lake itself, the Mississippi River, the Gulf of Mexico, and the Atlantic Ocean, that the Atlantic Ocean does not exist. They do have a point, though, which it would be obtuse to deny. Subspecies, races, grade into each other on the peripheries. This is as true of men as it is true of trout and sparrows. Hybridization, sometimes more common and sometimes quite rare, does occur in border areas. And gradation isn't always due to hybridization or mixing. It can also be due to a corresponding gradation in the factors driving evolutionary change in different areas. None of this prevents evolutionary divergence and speciation, however. And the evidence for that is right in front of your face, in the hundreds or thousands of species of living things you can probably find in your backyard alone. And it certainly has not prevented highly distinct human types from diverging, an ongoing process. The reason this hybridization in border areas is not a threat to ongoing evolution is that the subspecies inhabit territories that do not overlap much, so that the heartland, in which other subspecies are absent, is much larger than the border area. Within the heartland, the race develops in its own unique direction, over time becoming more and more different from other races. The danger in what the Jews are doing, in knocking down and delegitimizing our borders, is that they are setting up a situation in which the heartland of our people no longer exists, in which every place is a border region, in which every place is a place where hybridization is more likely to happen. This genocidal program, if carried on long enough, can be fatal to us. It amounts to genocide. I think that Reich's lies are lies of emphasis. Science is discovering more and more racial differences, more and more evidence of ever-increasing racial divergence with each passing day. And Reich wants to blunt these emerging truths with his stress on relatively less significant mixture events. He minimizes what is really the central fact of life on Earth, racial divergence and speciation, and exaggerates and over-dramatizes the subtext of occasional mixture events. Many of the mixture events he cites don't even rise to the racial level. Don't let yourself be deceived. A unique race has emerged in Europe. Our race. We have created philosophies, science, technology, literature, and art that far surpasses anything ever seen in the universe. We and no one else will be the builders of the bridge to the stars, which can and must be ours alone.
You're listening to Resolution Radio,
ResolutionRDO.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, Get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism, fundamentally, is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just to dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker. Nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now let me, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Send them, let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of us, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces. They just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.